Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to Kotaku Split Screen, the only podcast that didn't have to go to jury duty this week. It's March 6th, 2019, and we're coming to you a day early so that Jason can tell you all about his time playing the upcoming PS4 exclusive Days Gone. We also talk more about Bloodborne, surprise, surprise, Ape Out, and the Division 2 beta. Then we hit the news of the week with a new Pokemon game, more woes for Anthem, and a questionable game publisher AMA on 8chan. We close out with some off-topic discussion of Killing Eve, Mrs. Maisel, Leaving Neverland, The Dropout, and a Russian doll spoiler discussion, which is a lot of fun. What did it all mean in the end? You'll have to listen to find out. Stick around. And we are back for another episode. As always, we're so glad that you've joined us to talk about video games. My name is Kirk Hamilton, and I'm very glad to be back after a week off. It's very nice to see my two co-hosts again. Those two co-hosts are Maddie Myers. Hello, Maddie.
Hey, welcome back.
Thanks.
I'm glad to have you.
It's nice to be back. And also, of course, Mr. Jason Schreier. Hello, Jason.
Hello, hello, hello. Thank you for serving our country and your state.
Man, jury duty in Oregon is 2 days. Which it was kind of my script to not remember that, which is
I think
why
that's pretty standard.
Nah, not everywhere, or at least in California, I remember it was always 1 day. But I just sat
it's
there.
It's 1 day in Massachusetts too. Huh. Yeah,
in New York it's 2.
So I just sat there the whole time. I didn't get to be on a jury. I didn't get to do anything. I literally sat in a chair for 2 days. Which they give you this video before you do jury duty where they kind of explain here's how a jury works, and there's a lot of sort of like subtext of, I know you're annoyed to be here, but it's important and we need you. And you can kind of pick that up from everything they say. And one of the things they say is, even if you're never impaneled or asked to be on a jury, you're still useful because knowing that jurors could be impaneled, you know, drives attorneys to settle cases. And it's pretty cold comfort when you've been sitting there for a second day, just kind of staring at your phone.
Do they show you the video again at that point where they're just like, we can tell you're all demoralized now that you've been here for a full day. But remember that video?
Yeah, let's watch it again.
Sucks the most for people who are freelance. Like yourself, for people who work hourly and don't get paid annual salary, so they like really are just like losing it. They pay, right? They pay you a little.
They pay you in Oregon. They pay you $10 a day for the first 2 days, so not a lot. Cool. If you get on a grand jury, I think it goes up to $25 a day. But
hey, you could buy yourself lunch those 2 days.
Yeah, great. Congrats. I think they cover your bus fare too. I think some people's jobs like pay for them to do jury duty. So yeah, it's definitely it is the worst if you're say a freelancer who gets paid for each episode of a podcast that he produces and then doesn't produce that podcast one week. But by the second day, I really just kind of wanted to be on a jury. I think I'd be a good juror.
Because of the sunk cost fallacy.
Partly.
You've been there for so long. You were like, I love juries now. Like, I want to do this.
Well, my mom was a public defender, and I've always been fascinated by the justice system. I think I would be a good juror. Though I guess for that reason, they'd probably kick me off of a jury just because...
Because you seem too excited. They'd be freaked out.
Yeah.
They'd be like, there's something wrong with
like,
this guy.
Oh, your mom was a defense attorney? No. You're not going to be on a
jury. You should just get up and say, everything I know about trials I learned from Danganronpa.
Yeah, I learned from Phoenix Wright and Danganronpa. So I will be expecting
like,
dramatic
twists.
We don't
know what that is, but no, you can't be.
I actually think, so one of the Phoenix Wright games actually ends with them inventing the jury system, and then they just throw it out after that.
Like, this is stupid. We just want the judge to be in charge and to tell everybody what's going on.
Yeah, well, so the whole concept of that game was that like Phoenix was sabotaging things so he could overhaul the entire justice system because it made no sense to just have one judge deciding everything. But then for some reason they threw it out later. I don't know. I don't remember exactly the sequence of events there. But actually, this is a good segue because we have a lot to get to today, and we should start by talking about some of the games we are playing.
Yeah.
And why don't we start with you, Maddie, with your Danganronpa adventures. Anything new to share on that
Sure.
front?
I've gotten a lot further. I beat two more trials since last I talked to you, Jason. I was in the middle of a trial about the art school art room mallets the last episode.
I've defeated that trial
and I felt like a damn genius because I guessed every single twist in that trial way ahead of time. It wasn't even boring
because I could just pat myself on the back.
Would you rather guess it or would you rather be surprised? Well, it's fun to be surprised, but I really enjoyed guessing it. And I think part of why I was enjoying that sensation so much was because over the weekend, I basically was switching back and forth between playing Bloodborne and Danganronpa, like in sort of chunks of time. And those games produce such completely different sensations in your brain, where like Danganronpa is, the activity is reading and observing tiny things and then putting them together in your own brain, and in my case trying very hard to guess the mystery. The second mystery was the closed room mystery, which I think you mentioned, Kirk, as being one of the more interesting ones. Mm-hmm. I didn't guess everything in that one.
Yeah, that one was tricky, if I remember correctly.
It is tricky and interesting, and also is an example of a time when Monokuma isn't really giving you all the clues that you need.
Yeah, it cheats a little bit, right? Maybe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's fine because the game cheating a little bit is part of the plot of the game.
Right. I mean, Monokuma,
like, you are in an unfair situation. Yes. Monokuma is going to screw you over some of the time. You won't be able to guess everything if information is being purposefully withheld from you, as it is in that case. But yeah, I really enjoyed that sensation of feeling like a genius, because Bloodborne is a game that really doesn't make me feel like a genius. No. I have a lot to say
about really
Bloodborne
thing.
Actually.
How far are you in Bloodborne now?
Okay, so like about a month ago, I'm just going to review for the listeners who may be coming in cold and not know the Bloodborne story with me. But I remember I played a couple hours and I talked about it on this show and I was like, it's going great. Everything's coming back to me. I remember versatile attacks. I remember shooting somebody. I remember how to do everything in Bloodborne. And at the time, I was kind of like, whenever I've got time to play this game again, it's all going to come back to me. I'm just going to play Kingdom Hearts for a few weeks, and then I'll circle back around to Bloodborne. So this past weekend was me doing that. And on Saturday night, I sat down, played a few hours of Bloodborne. And for those first few hours, I really hated it, you guys. I was really mad, and it was not coming back to me in those hours. I was not enjoying it. Mm-hmm. I was not getting past that stupid bonfire. I remember all of it. I remember the beginning of the game. I have played that before, so I was like, I know what I have to do here. But it was not fun.
You're talking about
very
the where they're burning the wolf. You mean the the crowd is? Oh yeah, that's
you have to just pick off a million guys.
You can kind
slowly.
Of just run through
you
it.
You can. Okay, so like then I took a break from it on Sunday. I played a bunch. I went skiing with my family.
Nice.
I played a bunch of Danganronpa. I was like, I'll play it Monday because I had a day off Monday. And so I did it. I played a whole lot of Bloodborne on Monday. Now I'm far enough. I'm at the next area. I'm at either I could fight Father G or the Cleric Beast next, but I want to get some more stuff before I do that. So I'm going to grind a little bit more before I fight either one of those guys. I'll probably do Cleric first because that's fine. That's easy. I know how to fight that guy. Mm-hmm. So like but I got past the friggin' stupid beginning of the game. Like, I got
the first,
far
yeah.
enough that I was like, I remember how to play this game. But it took me so long, guys. Like,
it's such a bad beginning. It really is. And
can we just
considering
admit
how incredible
this?
The game is.
Is this a controversial statement? Like, the beginning of this game is so hard. And the reasons why it's hard are not things that I think are fun in a hard game personally. Like,
it's just
like
off-putting.
It's not like you're learning combos in a fighting game and you just have to figure out when to do them, which is a form of hard that I can understand. This is like hard in the sense that you just have to be incredibly patient with yourself. Like, it's a psychological torture. And like, the thing I was doing was just like taking a deep breath when I died and just like sitting on my couch and just being like, I really need to accept what I've done to myself and like accept that I can get through this and like emotionally withstand it. But then there would also be moments when I'd be like on a roll and I'd just be like killing guy, 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 guy. And I'd be like killing it. And I'd be like, I fucking got this. I've got this game. I have completely mastered it. And then like one thing would go wrong. And then that would be, there'd be several deep breaths on my couch at that moment of me being like, okay, I'm all the way back at the lantern. And also there in that bonfire section, you can totally, like, if you kill enough of those guys, you can just keep running and you can just get to the next part. But I couldn't quite remember how to get the shortcut back to the lantern again. I kind of did, but I didn't like fully remember it. So there were a few times when I was like, okay, I've killed enough guys. I'm just going to run through and get to the shortcut. And then I would like die some other stupid way on my way to getting to the shortcut. And then of course, I'd be back at the beginning. I'd have to kill all the guys.
So, yeah, like, one of the problems with that opening area, and one of the reasons that I think is bad as well, is that everything looks the same. It doesn't really have any... And later
but
in the game,
it gets so much more interesting as soon as you get out of there. Like, you got like the weird aqueduct guys and like all these other areas that I can like now get to if I want to.
So you're still, that's still all central Yarnum where you are.
Yeah,
you
don't actually get to the next. It's more interesting looking than the fucking bonfire that you walk through a million times.
Yeah, the streets all look the same. And so it's hard to wrap your head around like how everything is positioned. And then it's very easy to get lost. Later in the game, the more you play, you'll start to like make more, like it's the levels are better designed the more you play.
That's
in fact,
cool.
I would
but
say
anyway,
that's the worst design.
The end of my anticlimactic story was at like, I don't know, 7 or something on Monday night. I just somehow was so, everything became so rote and standard to me that I 100% cleared that entire section without having to run through it. Like, I just had a run where I was just like, I don't know, on doing well and not paying that much attention to what I was doing. And then I was just suddenly like, oh, I'm just at the bonfire and there's no one here anymore. I just killed everyone. And then I could just calmly walk through the gate. And that was also the run when I found the shortcut and just like found everything and was done with that. And then now I've just been playing the rest of the evening. I could just play the rest of the game normally and be like, oh yeah, 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 here's the bridge, here's the friggin' big werewolf guys and the spooky birds and all of these things that are terrifying. And yeah, it was, it got easier after that, but, well, easier, a weird word to use, but I really hate the beginning of this game, guys. I don't like it. And I think a lot of people quit after that. Like, I was looking online, a lot of people were like, I basically got to the cleric beast and was like, that's where I quit. I didn't want to keep going there. And I'm not gonna quit, but I kind of get it, because the beginning of this game, just, I don't know, it's not, I know it's gonna be good. I'm giving it a chance. Anyway, I'll let you guys talk. I've talked long enough.
I mean, I have a lot of thoughts on that.
Okay, great.
I get that criticism of the beginning of the game and the general criticisms of some of Bloodborne's level design, but I guess I want to push a little on the idea that a game...
Because you love it. Well, it's repetitive and you love that about it.
Well, let me know that's not it at all. The game, I mean, so I have a hard time obviously separating my like entire experience of Bloodborne.
Of course.
From like the first few hours of it. And I see those first few hours as a big part of that experience. It's just like one part of this huge experience that spanned like 100 hours. So bear that in mind. But I don't know. I think the idea that people would stop playing after the first few hours of this game, to me, like that's fine. And I guess if it, that is a kind of an indicator that it maybe isn't the game for you, but I don't really see that as a way, like, as
but
a way that I'm
true,
gonna,
because I did the same, and then when I gave it another chance, I loved it. I think the first few hours, that's what really turned me off the first time, and it is the game for me. It's a game I fucking love.
Yeah, I think though that, like, so first off, the thing that you're describing in terms of like it being disorienting, I don't necessarily think that's bad. I think the fact that the game makes you feel very lost and overwhelmed at first is part of the experience. And to, for me anyways, like that feeling of just being like, holy crap, I'm on the streets of this city. I don't know where I'm going. I'm constantly outnumbered, and it just feeling overwhelmed was part of the experience. And it was like not a welcoming or fun experience. But the feeling of conquering it then, and like you said, Maddie, the first time I walked around that square where the bonfire is, and I was like, hey, I'm just here, whatever, man. I'm the lord of this square. I can do anything I want. I can go look over in that corner. I can go look behind there. I can take my time. That was a great feeling, and it was partly because it was so hard. I'm not saying that, like, undoes any of the criticisms you're making or anything. Well, yeah. But in general, though, I think that the thing you're describing, like the internal process that you went through, is really a fascinating part of this game. And I don't know that it would be there if the game was more welcoming or let you in or kind of got you into this place. It kind of, the game has to like actually fight you. It can't just put up like a show of fighting you and saying, oh, well, really, we're welcoming you on so you can get to the next level sort of smoothly and frictionlessly. The game actually feels like an asshole that is not explaining itself and is being problematic. And you're like, oh my God, I don't want to deal with this. And that puts you in a real headspace of having to sort of find the inner peace and focus to get through it. I look back at the tips post that I wrote for that game, and so many of the tips are like self-help tips almost. They're,
I know,
you've got,
I love
this.
It. I've read it multiple times. I've looked to that post for encouragement in times of darkness, Kirk. It's been open in a tab on my laptop for 3 days.
I think that that part of the Bloodborne experience is a really cool and distinct part of the game, is that you have to actually look inward and kind of find some sort of a way to reckon with this odd, sort of weird, almost not broken, but just malformed object that you're interacting with, which is the game at times. And really, like, there are also a lot of repetitive levels in that game. That's sort of a knock against it. The Chalice Dungeons are that way. The Nightmare Frontier is sort of like very disorienting, and everything is just kind of the same color of weird gray white. Like, there are a lot of levels in that game actually that are pretty disorienting.
Wow. Things being the same color in Bloodborne, I'm shocked to hear more levels will be similar colors. Great. That's
so
fine.
And I don't know whether that's the game's purposeful aesthetic or design idea or just sort of some of the levels were more thrown together than others. But
the Nightmare Frontier isn't as big as Central Yharnam, so it's not as annoying, I would say.
Mm. Okay.
I mean, you don't have as far to go from a lantern before you get reset. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So anyways, just some thoughts on that.
Yeah, well, so I beat the game last week, so I fulfilled
you did it.
The obligation to Kotaku Split Screen much quicker than I thought I would. I actually thought it would take me a lot longer, but it turns out that I love this video game.
Once you get going, it moves a lot faster.
One of my favorites. To the point where not only did I beat the whole game, I also bought the DLC and beat the entire DLC. It's funny, I had read online that like all these DLC bosses like Lawrence and Orphan of Kos were going to be super hard and just like break me, but I actually didn't have too hard a time with them. I had the hardest time with Vicar Amelia and Martyr Logarius, and those were the two bosses that just stumped me. But anyway, I think it's an incredible achievement and an incredible video game after beating it all, after having done more than Kirk did, actually.
Yeah.
Because you didn't do the DLC, right?
No.
It's
done
funny
some
that
of the
you
DLC.
Like forced me to play this, and now I've played more of the game than you have, which is hilarious.
Yeah, though I've done more Chalice Dungeons than you, so in fairness.
Yeah, that's true. I'm not going to do Chalice Dungeons. The Chalice Dungeons suck. Yeah,
they're okay. There are some cool bosses, but they leave some room for improvement in the Fingers Crossed sequel.
In the Bloodborne 2. and so then I was playing a New Game Plus, so I'm now intimately familiar with the beginning area, and on New Game Plus.
It's so easy because you're an expert. You're dodging, you're rolling,
ready. It ramps up the difficulty. But yeah, I mean, I was just running through everything.
Oh, yeah. Like once you know exactly where to go.
I was like, you memorized it and you wind up kind of memorizing it. But rest assured that like there's so much better stuff ahead. And yeah, like I've said before, when I first started Bloodborne in 2015, the day like when it came out, I just hit a roadblock like after Central Yharnam. I was just like, I'm not enjoying this. And I really think it's because Central Yharnam is just not good. And I think to your point, Kirk, I think this game could have been punishing and could have pushed you off and like been resistant to the player without it just being so, I don't know, dull. I just find Central Yharnam very dull, especially when you get into the Cathedral Ward and you see like, oh wow, this is a game with like personality and flavor and isn't just like a bunch of like broken streets and boring same dude like zombie dude looking creatures.
I think that with a thing like Bloodborne, something that I know so intimately and have like a work, call it a book or a movie or TV show, whatever, like something that I've like spent so much time getting to know so intimately and understanding, and it is something that's so masterfully done, just big picture. It's funny because it's like counter to the role of being a critic, but I start to not really want to fix the weird parts because the weird parts are just part of the whole thing. And with Bloodborne, it's there comes a point where obviously identifying them and talking about them is interesting, and that's true, and like getting really granular and picking out the things that work and the things that don't work. But also, I stop short of saying, I wish this had been done differently. I don't actually feel that way about those sections of Bloodborne. I don't wish that the intro onboarded you better, or that the tutorials were clearer, or that the game explained itself better. And that's just part of my, it's like a distinct, unique thing with this game and maybe a few others, but it's just sort of a
we all have games like that.
Yeah.
And I feel that way about some old Metroid games irrationally, so I can understand.
And it's not, and I want to be clear, I'm not saying the game is above criticism. I'm not saying the game couldn't have been improved. It's just, I see it so much as this one thing. And at this point, at least, I would have probably talked about it right after I played it or when it first came out very differently. But at this point, Far Cry 2 is a game like that, where I say, you know what? Far Cry 2,
you put it on your shelf and it is this piece of art that is a vision.
I think it's maybe, I think it's related to time and the way that over time art just changes, and the farther we are from it and the farther we are from when it was created, the more it just feels like a thing and a moment in time and this one work of art that we sort of look at and just understand as a complete thing, and less as like, oh, I wish this were different. I wish this were different. This is kind of a going concern, a new thing.
Yeah, I guess I just have sort of a fundamental trouble with how long this game punishes you. And maybe that's just my personality. And I really agree with Jason's point about how eventually it becomes dull. Like, I'm fine with the game being scary and I'm fine with the game being hard for a really long time. Mm-hmm. But it actually eventually stops being scary, that initial section. It's not at all scary. No. It's mundane, and it stays mundane for a long time, at least for me, until I beat it. And by the time I beat it, it was so
mundane.
Knowing
that you have 20,000 blood echoes and you lose them
if you die.
It's at its scariest when you're in a new area and you have a bunch of shit and you don't want to lose it.
That's exciting and fun. And I enjoy that part of it, is exploring the new area and being like, eventually, I mean, this is the part that to me I'm not excited about, is the knowledge that eventually this new area will cease to be exciting and will eventually become incredibly mundane. But that is exactly the point of the game. And I can understand that that just may be something that either I grow to love or not. But I'm also like, if I grow to love this, then does it mean that I've entered into this weird cult that everyone else is in?
Don't overthink it. Don't overthink it. It's just whatever.
Soon you'll find yourself.
I'm watching like story videos explaining the story of Bloodborne. I'm totally on board.
Yeah, I think in Souls games in general, that the one place where I hit that the most is on boss fights. The boss fights tend to be the things that I like the least. And when I'm exploring, that's my favorite thing. Exploring a new area is fun. Going over areas I already know is fun. But when it's a boss, I start to definitely get that feeling of like, I've just been hitting my head against this forever, and there's kind of nowhere else for me to go. One of the nice things about the middle sections, one of the nice things about the middle sections of Bloodborne that you'll get to, is there's always kind of somewhere else you can go if you want to just go grind for Blood Echoes and explore. But there still can be that feeling of, I really just have to beat this boss, and I do not want to do it because I've done it, tried 50 times, and I keep losing, and it's making me hate my life.
Which makes it all the more satisfying when you finally do it.
Sure, and again, pulls you into that inner space where you're kind of reckoning with your own will, and that's always sort of an exciting thing for a video game to do.
Let's talk about a few more games, because we have a bunch of stuff to play. First of all, I have been playing Broken Age, because I downloaded, I was like looking for some new Switch games, and I remember that I think I played Broken Age when it first came out on my Vita, or when Act 2 first came out on my Vita, and like my save got wiped or something, or I lost a bunch of progress in part of the process. So I was like, you know, I never finished that game, so I kind of want to play it. Cool game, beautiful game, funny game, charming game.
It's
I like
funny.
That
I did the same thing as you and replayed it when it came out on phones or something. And it was after watching the documentary, because the documentary is so great. Anybody listening to this now who didn't listen,
Maddie, you have to go listen or watch the Double Fine documentary.
I should watch
it. It's so good. Yeah. So anyone listening to this who didn't listen when Jason and I were raving about the Double Fine documentary, a year or two ago, it's super good. That it's this big, long, really like warts and all game development documentary. It'll teach you a lot about how games are made. And I wanted to play it after that. And I did the same thing, thinking, oh, I never finished this game. And I started playing it on phone, which is a good place to play it. And then I still haven't finished it.
I can't believe you guys didn't finish it at the time. I just finished it the first time around.
Well, I would have finished it if my save hadn't been erased.
Well, fair enough. But there's also the two parts, which I feel like I know a lot of people who played one part or the other part and then that was a good stopping point mentally for them, and they just never did the other half of whichever one they started.
The first act ends with a cliffhanger.
And the second act makes you go back
but
through...
That, not everyone I know played them in that order, though.
Oh, really?
But sure, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
No, well, the order... Unusual. So the way it works is you play as Shay and Vella, and then they both have stopping points, and then there's a cliffhanger for them both. And then act two is you play as them again. So it's not like you can play...
So the thing that made me lose momentum in Act 2 is that you play as them again, but you basically revisit the same place as the other character went in the second half. And I just kind of didn't want to... It's maybe shallow, but I just didn't want to go through the same environments. I kind of wanted to see more new stuff. And I just got a little bit stuck. I should go finish it, though. I think I still have my save on my phone.
And then I played a bunch of the new Destiny stuff today, which just went live. Yeah. We're recording this on Tuesday. It literally just went live. The coolest thing, the thing that I just spent the most time on, is the catch-up bounties, which are very helpful.
The coolest thing is the thing that lets me level quickly.
it made me feel like...
No, it is nice.
Hey,
it's
I can
a really
actually
nice
catch
addition.
Up to that. Cause, so a little bit of background here. When the first... So this season of Destiny, this year two of Destiny 2 is done via season pass, and you pay for a season pass. And then you get all these updates instead of like having to buy different big DLC packs. So it's a little bit different than previous years of Destiny have been. And with the last one, Season of the Forge, they released this new stuff, and it was so high level that like basically nobody could play it, and you had to get super... There was a ton of grinding before you could actually do anything. This time around, they actually added these catch-up bounties where you just grab these and you do them, and they're pretty easy and quick to do, and then you get equipment that'll level you right up to 640, which is like just below where you need to be if you want to start doing the new stuff, which is really smart and a cool way to give you, make you feel like you're earning that power, because you still have to do these bounties, and they're each like, there are four of them. Each one gives you two pieces of equipment that gets your light level up, and then they make you just do things. So you have to, one of them is Gambit stuff, one of them is Strike stuff, one of them is PvP stuff, and you just have to do them. So it makes you feel like you're putting in the work, but not as much grindy work as you would have to if you were leveling up normally. So that was cool, and now I feel like I just gained 20 levels in one day, which was fun. And then I tried Gambit Prime, which seems pretty cool. It's pretty fun. Sort of like a more intense, like speedier version of Gambit, which I like. I like that it's only one round.
It's interesting, right? So I played one game of it. And so to explain to people what Gambit is just quickly, Gambit is like a PvP VE thing. So most of the time, there are two teams of four. You're in two different separate arenas. You fight a whole bunch of enemies. You summon a boss, and whoever kills the boss first wins. But you can invade and kind of affect the other people's game, like the other team. And you can go in and try to kill them at various times, and they can go try to kill you. And it was always played over three rounds. Gambit Prime is just one round. But I played one round, and it was interesting because it's faster than Gambit, but way slower than a single round of Gambit would be. I was expecting it to go faster, but it's cool because you summon the boss, and then there are a lot of phases to it, and there are more new mechanics where the boss becomes immune. You have to like take out new envoys, and you're getting invaded all the time. And there's also a way of draining points from the other teams, so you can go backward in your progress, which also slows the match down. I liked it. Yeah, I thought it was.
It's cool. I haven't gotten to try the new Reckoning thing yet, which is a totally new mode.
I'm sure we'll do that before next week. And
yeah, we can talk about that more next week. Kirk, what are you playing?
Oh man. Okay, I played the Division 2 beta. I guess that's the first thing I should talk about over the weekend. It's basically more Division, so it's not maybe super exciting in that way. It was nice to play it after Anthem, just because, you know, as a reminder that, oh yeah, if you have a lot of years to work on one of these kinds of games, you can get pretty good at it. It's a really impressive beta in terms of scope and scale. It's gigantic. You could put like 30 hours into this beta. It's this huge chunk of Washington, D.C.
Wow. And does your progress carry over?
No, it doesn't. So I stopped playing after a couple hours.
Wow.
I might be wrong about that. I believe that it doesn't. Double check that. Don't anyone listening go take it.
It would be wild if people put in 30 hours of this beta and it's just like, oh, start from scratch.
I mean, if I were not going to buy the game and I was just like, oh, I want to play some of this cool game for a little while for free, then I guess I could see that. But
sure.
So this game is, little background, The Division is like Tom Clancy-verse, so you're this member of this elite government, secret, probably unconstitutional task force that...
But it's not political, so...
Sure.
Uh-huh. I can't say it's unconstitutional.
Yeah, whatever.
There isn't even a constitution in the game. That's part
exactly.
of it.
Yeah, right. It takes place in Washington, D.C.
Your base is in the White House, but it's not political.
So yeah, there are no laws.
Yeah, that's a whole separate conversation. Yeah, so the first one was in New York. There's like a bioweapons attack that's sort of, or a chemical weapon. No, a bioweapons attack. Like they infect the money with this pathogen that then kills a whole bunch of people. And it's kind of a post-apocalyptic thing. And then you, I don't know, fought to secure New York in the first one. And now it's in Washington, D.C. So that's where that's set. And it does have, I mean, I'm probably not going to play a ton of this game. I'll play through the main campaign. The thing that I liked about the first Division, which I'm pretty sure I reviewed, I think I did review for Kotaku, was that when you're exploring New York, the New York in that game was incredible looking. It was super vivid and really felt like being in New York. And there were all these cool little environmental stories that you could just find. And it was kind of like most post-apocalyptic games where you're finding audio logs and learning things that happened. But this game, like, just it kind of relays those stories in a really cool, slick way. You'll see these kind of holographic recreations of various freeze frames and hear what was happening. And you can kind of watch as like the city breaks down or like people try to find one another. And there are some really kind of heartwarming, actually, stories, which is a cool part of the game and probably my favorite part. Compared with the overall tone of the game, which is very Tom Clancy military kind of neocon, vaguely right wing, just, you know, you're like imposing order on the chaos, and there are these, you know, these thugs and heathens that are out with guns trying to, you know, kill the good people. And it's got a lot of that kind of militaristic police state bullshit that Tom Clancy games tend to have. And it can be pretty overwhelming. There are just times where I'm like, I'd rather just go play Destiny and fly around in space shooting monsters. Like, so the sequel
well,
seems
that's
like
how I feel. Like, if I'm going to play a game where I'm shooting things over and over again, I'd rather it be aliens than people.
That's sometimes an issue with Ubisoft games in general, especially the Tom Clancy games, is where really smart people make these games. Ubisoft Massive, the studio that makes this, are very, very good at this. And like, there's all these cool ideas that when you play at quality of life stuff and mission design stuff, like stuff that I'd love to see in other similar games, be it Destiny, Anthem, whatever, and haven't. And so it's cool to play the game, just like a lot of Ubisoft games, to see the cool design ideas they're doing. So I'll probably play it to check that out. Like, the dark zone in this game is this area you go and it's kind of PvE, but then there's also, you can kind of turn rogue and attack one another. So it's got this kind of watch your back vibe, and it's all really interestingly designed.
But it's not political, don't worry.
No, it's not. So obviously the game is like got politics in it, but also they're not making, I think, well, whatever. When they say that, what they're saying is like, we're not anti-Trump. You know, we're not going to give you the thing you're looking for, which is we're not going to stand up and say Trump is bad. Like, you should vote against him, right? That's what they're saying. Like, look, we don't want the trouble that would cause. We don't want people coming after us. Right. But obviously, yes, the game has like politics. There are like references to border security and immigration and all kinds of things in it. It is, it is draped in politics, whether or not it is actually making a political statement about the current American political ecosystem. Anyways, so I played that beta. It seems
cool.
Yeah,
what else are you playing?
I'll play the thing. I'll go kind of quickly through my other stuff. Let me see. I wrote it all down. Oh, I played Ape Out. Have either of you played Ape Out?
No.
It's hard. We streamed it at Kotaku.
It's really fun.
It's the talk of the town.
It's a fun game. It's this indie game. And I want to call it Ape Out, but then it just doesn't sound like... It's called Ape Out because you play an ape that breaks out. And so Ape Out. And you're also kind of aping out. And it's a top-down game. It's made by three game developers, two of whom I know. It's a guy named Gabe Cuzzillo, who I don't know. Bennett Foddy, who made like Quap. And, you know, he makes those kind of frustrato core
Getting over
games.
It.
Getting yeah. Over It was... his big one. And then Matt Bach, who's a really cool guy, actually worked at Harmonix. I don't know if he's still there. He designed a lot of the original sort of Rock Band instruments. And he's just this really interesting, cool dude who does a lot of stuff with music. So Ape Out is a top-down Hotline Miami style. It's like a kind of a touchstone, just to know. It's like a really fast moving arcade game. You're this ape, it has a really cool art style, and you basically are trying to escape from a facility, and it's very violent. Like, you just grab dudes and like splat them on the wall, and it's stylized, but geez, there's like blood and body parts everywhere. And then the game is also very musical, so the whole thing is designed around these percussion samples that they have. So there's a sense of this like free flowing kind of almost like jazz drum solo. I've seen the word jazz thrown a lot around, used to describe this game, how this game is some sort of a statement on jazz. I think people should be maybe a little less casual with their use of the word jazz when they're talking about this game. I think that there are some cool aspects
of
this.
You should write a take about this.
Yeah, I don't need to. The world doesn't need
my... It's time to stop using jazz.
Okay, everyone. Yeah, the world doesn't need my stuffy, okay, jazz is actually like a little different than this thing. But like, it does have this kind of fun improvisational feel or loose feel the way that jazz does. And there are, you know, drum hits and cymbal crashes and like horn hits will hit when you hit somebody. And it's all very reactive. And the game is rhythmic in this way that's really awesome and does feel very percussive and really cool. So it's neat, and I recommend people check it out. I think it's cool. Like on PC, it's on Switch. I know it's. I think it's.
Yeah.
Probably
do you
want to
blaze through the rest of these real quick? Because we're,
I know. We talked about Bloodborne for so long. We don't. Whatever. Actually, I don't really have much else. The only thing I'll say is a quick recommendation for a board game that I played last night called Now Boarding, which was made by some of the same people who made the game Burgle Bros. If either of you know that, or any of our listeners know that, but Now Boarding is a cooperative game where you're trying to route passengers on planes around the country, and it's for like 4 to 6 people. We played with 4, and you each sort of have an airline, so you're a regional airline, and then you have passengers that turn up at the various airports around the country. You need to load them onto your planes and get them from place to place, and they get more and more angry as turns pass. And if they get too angry, they lodge a complaint, lodge 3 complaints, and you lose the game. So
like a theme game or like a sim tower or like a theme hospital.
A little, yeah.
I mean, you have to satisfy all your customers and stuff.
Yeah, and it feels very much like this fun simulation of the difficulties of running an airline. And what's really cool about it that I really like, and this is just, you know, it's a fun game, check it out. But the thing that I like is it's a cooperative game, and you sit around and you plan your strategy. You say, okay, well, we need to get this person to, you know, whatever, to DFW, and this person needs to get to O'Hare. So if you can pick them up, I can drop them off there. There's a lot of that. But what the game does that I think is really cool that a lot of co-op games don't do is there's also this, there's this period where you've planned your strategy, but there are a few people at various airports that are flipped upside down. And then when you flip those right side up and you can see the new people who've been added, you turn a timer on and you have 30 seconds to do all of your moves. So because of that, you can't do the thing that you can do in a lot of co-op tabletop games, which is where you basically just like team make every decision and no one's really playing their character. I don't know if you've played many of these games, but it really turns up like, okay, well, you should just do this, and someone else will kind of figure out your move for you, and you'll be like, oh yeah, you're right, that's the best move, and you're kind of not always playing your part. But when there's 30 seconds, everyone just has to do their thing. Like, there's not enough time to communicate or talk. You just have to go. And so there's this kind of planning period that's very collaborative. But then there's just this chaotic, like, go and everyone do their thing period that's much more like fast paced, and you make mistakes, and you don't get everything done. So it's kind of like a lot of control and then total chaos. So you're planning for the chaos, which is really cool. It's like extremely well designed, and I recommend it. So that's called Now Boarding.
Cool.
And
Now
that's,
Boarding.
That's what I've been playing.
Okay, cool. Why don't we take a break, and then we will be back with some news and Days Gone, the upcoming zombie game.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Hey, I'm Melissa Kirsch, editor-in-chief of Lifehacker.
And I'm Alice Bradley, Lifehacker's deputy editor.
And we're the hosts of Lifehacker's podcast, The Upgrade. On The Upgrade, we help you improve your life one week at a time. We talk to guests like former hacker Hector Monsegur about online security.
You need to be aware of how you could be attacked. You need to be aware of what's your weakness.
And Alan Alda on how to communicate more effectively.
And in order to achieve that, we start with teaching exercises derived from improvisation.
And sex therapist Steven Snyder about how to have great sex in a long-term relationship.
What really works under those circumstances is if you enjoy the other person selfishly.
Hey, your life? It's terrible. We can help.
Find The Upgrade wherever you get your podcasts.
And we are back. Kirk, Maddie, let's talk about some news real quick.
Let's
do it. A lot of huge stuff over the past week, but a couple of things that I think are worth bringing up. Number one, on Thursday morning, I think it was, or Wednesday morning, some day last week after we recorded, Nintendo announced Pokemon, the new Pokemon games for Switch, which are coming this fall, Sword and Shield. Mm-hmm. And then there's a hilarious story where this newspaper in Mexico saw a tweet that was like a joke tweet that saying that the third entry would be Pokemon Gun. And it had this graphic of a gun. And the Mexican newspaper actually printed it as if it were a real thing, which is amazing. Pokemon Gun, the third entry in this series. But yeah, Pokemon Sword and Shield. Did you guys see this? See the trailer? Mm-hmm. Have any strong opinions on Pokemon?
Like a video game that I will buy and you will not buy, Jason. That's what it sounds like to me.
Yeah, I mean, it might be it's like every single time I'm like, is this the Pokemon game?
Oh, are you going to do it again? Finally, are you going to do this to yourself for the millionth
probably
time?
Probably not. No, probably not.
I give you permission not to. I'll check it out. I'll let
you
know.
Yeah, I'll give it to my wife. I'll like get a copy and give it to my wife and see if she gets into it. And then we'll watch over her shoulder and see if mm-hmm. I would like it. Probably
I'm going
to
play it. Can I just?
Cool. Nice.
I'm totally going to play it. I think it looks
good. Let's talk about it on this show.
I think it looks
Kirk.
Good. It looks very pretty and calming.
Yeah, Pokemon games just. I just wish they would stop talking about Pokemon. Like the NPCs, all they do is talk about Pokemon. Mm-hmm. I just don't
That's
get it.
Part of the charm of it all.
No, it's a not charm,
Jason.
But yeah, but the new stuff, the new starters look hilarious.
Yeah,
I like Sobble, who yes. has a sad face. The anxious Pokemon. Finally, an anxiety type Pokemon.
Well, they know their audience, right? I feel like that was very much designed for the Pokemon.
Their audience is anxious millennials uh-huh. who want to recapture their youth by buying yet another Pokemon.
One of the things that I think is too bad is that it seems like from the brief glimpse of the game we got, it seems like they aren't really changing much to the formula. So like they showed random encounters.
You really think they're going to change the Pokemon? To change the formula of Pokemon.
No. The real shame is that the 95th millionth Pokemon game isn't changing the formula.
You guys always interrupt me and you don't let me finish my sentence.
That's so much more fun than letting you finish your sentences.
Such as random encounters, which they changed in Let's Go to be visible on the world map, which everybody loved, including mm-hmm. every Pokemon fan. Like, I don't think a lot of Pokemon fans are like psyched about random encounters coming back. That's what I'm talking about.
So they're not changing the formula. Fair, but... They're actually reverting old changes that they already made to the formula to previous versions.
Yeah, but Let's Go is like a spin-off, so that doesn't count because this is the first proper entry in the game, in the series.
And I'm sure there are people out there who have strong opinions about how they actually don't want to know what Pokemon are in tall grass. I don't know. I haven't looked into that. People mm-hmm. can write in and tell us if they care either way.
How do you feel about
the
tall
grass?
I thought
that was fine. I'm okay either way on it, personally. Mm-hmm. I'm not mad if they're reverting
that particular
change.
Well, I just don't like random encounters in general. I feel like they're just antiquated. I used to be fine with them, but more and more I've just become grown a distaste for them.
It's funny because you named your JRPG column Random Encounters.
I know, right?
Irony.
I think I wrote an article about the joy of random encounters as well.
Really?
But now you've changed. You should write another one that's like the anxiety of random encounters.
You should write a headline that's like, I was wrong about random encounters, assuming that that everyone remembers that.
Yeah, everyone remembers it and everyone
knows my famous stance about random encounters.
Yeah. It would be fun if you treated it as though it was famous. You should do it.
I don't think people would get the joke.
Nope.
Couple more news items. Anthem is crashing PS4s. This is just the newest entry in the Anthem Disaster Watch series, which is that people with PS4s are opening up the game and just like getting crashes not only of the game but of their entire PS4s. And then some people thought that it was bricking their PS4s, but as it turns out, it appears that and obviously, there's no way to know for sure of the thousands or tens of thousands or however many people were affected by this. I don't know if any of them were actually bricked, but the people who thought they were bricked because their PS4s wouldn't turn on, it turns out you have to like hold the button down or like press it twice or something and get it to load up in safe mode in order like, to actually do
turn
it.
Two full 360s.
Yeah, you have
in front
to say Beetlejuice in the mirror three times. You have to
just say Mark Cerny three times in front of a mirror.
Yeah, and then you have to rebuild your database. Yeah, you say NAC three times and the PS4 comes back to life. Yeah, you have to rebuild your database and it's all just a mess. And man, I feel for the developers of Anthem because there's so many people at BioWare, hundreds of people worked on this game, and so many of them had nothing to do with the many high-level design decisions that led to all these problems and all the technical problems and everything else. So many of them just like crunched their asses off to make this game, and now it's a disaster, and it's a bummer. It's all a bummer. It's all just a big bummer.
Yeah.
And my only two thoughts on this are, one, that bricked as like a verb is just like an enjoyable, I like that that is like this gamerism. It's a gamerism that I like. Just bricked.
It's
that thing got bricked. It was made brick-like.
And it has a specific meaning to the point where we have to specify technically they were not bricked because you can still turn them on in the specific scenario.
Yeah. It's a good word, though. A good word for a bad thing. And also, this feels like Fallout 76. I feel like the narrative always does this where there's this unbelievable spiraling, and it starts with, oh yeah, the game kind of isn't great and then has some problems and then there's technical problems, and then soon it's like the game came into my house and kicked my dog and broke my TV, and you know, and that there's always some with Fallout 76, remember, it was the bag thing, and then they expose everybody's private information, and it was like, oh my god, like this just went from bad to worse, and this now is sort of feeling similar, which is a shame.
Yeah. It is a real bummer.
Do you guys think now is a good time for me to pick up Anthem, though?
Yeah, I'd say go for it.
Okay, great.
On PS4, if possible.
Only on PS4.
Yeah, oh, of course.
And then the third news item, this is a really big bummer, is THQ Nordic, which is a publisher that I'm not sure many people care about, but they have the name THQ, which they, this is all very confusing.
Toy headquarters. Basically they're the headquarters for toys.
What's that?
They're the headquarters for toys. They're toy headquarters. That's what THQ stood for originally.
That's true. Yeah. Well, so THQ Nordic is like, they took the brand of THQ and like bought it, and for some reason attached it to their name.
You think that they bought the physical Nordic headquarters with all the toys in it? Or like,
they did.
There is no headquarters with toys in it.
What?
Sorry to burst your bubble here.
Wow. You're really disillusioning me here, Jason.
There is a landfill full of UDraw tablets, though.
They should have put those in the headquarters. I'm sure they had storage for those
but
are
anyway,
toys.
So this company Nordic decided to rename itself after a failed bankrupt publisher, which to me is inexplicable. It makes no sense. But now it turns out they're even more of a disaster than we thought, because last week they tweeted, while Maddie and I were recording last week's episode, they actually tweeted, hey, we're hosting an AMA and Ask Me Anything on 8chan. And 8chan is the website so vile that they're like made up of people who were banned from 4chan, who because they were like trying to do Gamergate stuff and like other malicious stuff on 4chan. And 4chan was like,
no, porn is always the thing I've heard.
Yeah, that's a big thing there, is like child porn and other nasty stuff. Really just like the dregs of the internet.
It was not okay on 4chan. I mean, really, like, that says it all, doesn't it?
Yeah, right, yeah. Imagine being so bad that even 4chan is
like, you guys gotta go. We're done. Take that somewhere else.
You guys, this is way too much for us.
Yeah, but that literally is what happened. It sounds like a joke, but it's real.
And so this video game publisher, this like C-tier video game publisher, decided to host an AMA there, and it was immediately disaster. They had to apologize like 2 hours later and delete the tweet and be like, what are we doing?
Did the AMA happen, or they just said they were going to do it?
Yeah, it happened. Okay. They started answering questions there before the backlash started. And actually, if you look at like the questions that they had, and I won't get into all the nitty-gritty details, but it became very clear that whoever was in charge there, I forget the guy's name, but their marketing dude, I think Philip something, he was very clearly like in on this and like very clearly knew what 8chan's deal was and like was responding to them and like kind of like endorsing some like really vile stuff that they were saying, like responding to like things that would say like homophobic slurs he would be responding to. And I think they liked a tweet that was like, don't listen to the SJWs, like it was that sort of thing where it was like, clearly this is like not a great person who made this decision. And they have since apologized a couple of times. times, including an official apology from the head of the whole company, but haven't said anything about like what they're actually doing to fix this, or if anybody has been punished or reprimanded for this. Has not that has not happened as far as we know.
Was this like a publicity stunt? I mean, we're talking about THQ Nordic on Kotaku Split Screen, you know?
That's the thing. Yeah. I keep thinking about that. And I have actually, I've seen some people, especially on Reset Era, which is the gaming forum that I read a lot. A lot of people have been complaining about the lack of coverage and how people aren't just like talking about this every day and hammering it. But like, and I think those people overestimate how much people, like how much attention should be paid to THQ Nordic.
And how much people care. Yeah. I mean, or I don't know, like our average listener, do they care that it's like you described them as a C-tier publisher? Like it's okay, they did it.
I can't think of the last time. So I think Deep Silver is part of that. So the way they have a confusing structure, and that THQ Nordic, this organization, is like owned by another company, a bigger parent company called THQ Nordic AB, that also owns Deep Silver. So Deep Silver, who just published Metro Exodus, which is certainly a game that we've been talking about, is on part of the same family of companies.
Okay.
So there is, and they also did Darksiders, and then just they've done a ton of other random stuff. Not a lot of stuff that we care about or pay much attention to. But yeah, I mean, I think this would be a very different story if this were a bigger publisher, a publisher we actually paid more attention to, but it's very rare for us to be covering THQ Nordic at all. That said, this is pretty heinous, pretty vile stuff for them
endorsing on 8chan.
It's hard to imagine a bigger publisher that had like any level of PR department at all even agreeing to something like this, though. Like it seems like something that could only happen with a smaller company who maybe has one marketing person that is a chanter and is like, this will be fun to do.
And at the very least, like with a small company, like at the very least for them, it'll get some people talking about them. Where if you're a big company, you just go to Reddit and do a regular ass AMA.
Exactly. And like that was what everybody said at the time. Like, why wouldn't you just do an AMA on Reddit, the site people use for that? Like, genuinely, what is the logic of doing one on 8chan? Like, no one's even doing
the
that.
The only possible logic I can think of to get people to get angry about talking, it and talk about it.
I think they probably figured whoever made this decision probably figured figured it would be controversial, but not like so controversial that they'd have to issue these apologies.
I think
and
they
stuff
thought
like
that people would be a little mad, but that they'd be kind of like titillated by it, and that it would be exciting and cool. And instead people were just mad.
They would get over it. So stay tuned for next week when Kotaku Split Screen will host an AMA on Stormfront.
Great. Finally. Check out that one. You know what You'll I mean?
Hello, Stormfront. I'm Jason Schreier. Ask me anything about
you. Oh, no.
Cool. So why don't we talk about Days Gone? So a couple of weeks ago, I went to an event in New York, a Sony preview event where they set up some copies of Days Gone, and I played about an hour and a half of it. So just a little bit of context here. Days Gone is the next big exclusive from Sony, the next big PS4 exclusive. Comes out April 26th. It is developed by Sony Bend, which is, I believe, the only AAA development studio in your state of Oregon, Kirk,
in the mountains of Bend. It's such a lovely location. Oh my God. Bend, Oregon is this extremely beautiful place. And if I were going to work at a game studio and like toil away in the salt mines, you could do worse than doing it and getting to go home
next
to
a window, hopefully.
I really want to. If anyone from Sony Bend is listening to this and wants to invite the three of us to come out, me and Maddie will fly to Portland and do a road trip. Let's do a road trip.
Backpack around.
Combination, backpacking, ski weekend, and then maybe like check out their studio a little bit.
That'd be sick. I would love to do that.
That would be fun.
So it is, it's a zombie biker game. You play as a member of a bike gang who like bikes around the world, kills zombies, does all sorts of stuff.
It's too bad that you don't play as a zombie biker.
I thought you played as a zombie and I was like, that's sick. You're part of an undead biker gang. You are trying to find brains.
It's kind of like a cross between Sons of Anarchy and The Last of Us. And I think the best way to describe it, what I wrote down after playing it, like right down in my notebook, was this is like the most AAA-ass video game I've ever played. It is like, if you think of a checklist of like, what should I expect in a AAA video game? It's got every single thing. It's got the open world. It's got the side quests. It's got the crafting. It's got the skill wheel you open up, and then you can pick different things, and you can create yourself healing bandages and use those. It's got the zombies you can sneak up on and then get an instant death kill by sneaking up behind them and stabbing them. And it's got the town outposts where you can do side side quests for people and go shopping and trade in the stuff you find in the wild. And it's got the list of side quests that you have to do and go around the world collecting outposts and destroying things. And everything you would expect from a AAA video game is in this game. I don't think that in the hour and a half or so I played, I don't think there was a single new idea that I haven't seen somewhere
Are there
else.
Audio logs, though? Because
I'm sure
that.
There are. I'm well, sure there thank are audio goodness. Logs. There's everything that you could think of in a AAA video game is in this game. It is like the most generic video game that you can possibly think of. It's got the gruff main character whose emotional arc is triggered by the death of his wife. It's literally everything you could possibly think of. But here's the thing: after I played it and I came back to my desk, like the next day, I was just thinking, "Hey, I want to play more of this game. Like it's good, it's fun. Like despite all those things, like it might be
the power.
It just feels
games.
Like a game. Mm-hmm. It actually reminds me." Of Mad Max, that game a few years ago, which I never actually played, but like
I heard
was very
it was
much...
so good, and I keep meaning to go back and check it out because that game has kind of a cult following.
I've played it.
That well, it's very much like this. It's like the collection of AAA things.
It's it's very much like AAA video games, the video game, and it is good. I played it enough of it, and it was a game that kind of got written off by critics, and then the people who liked it were like, "Hey, wait a minute! This game was really fun. I played it for 40 hours and had a great time filling up all the bars and unlocking all the little things on the map." And so it sounds sort of similar to that.
So this I feel like is going to have a similar reception. A couple of things worth noting. One is that the story is surprisingly well done. I was very impressed by the writing and the acting, and it just felt
you felt like, really bad when the wife died.
So you don't actually see her. So a little bit of context here. So the first thing
she died off screen, so I didn't even feel anything for her.
The demo doesn't actually show everything. Like so, the demo for me, the first thing I saw was your dude, your main dude, is like escaping someplace, and there's a chopper coming, and his wife is hurt, and so he puts her on the chopper, and then his friend is left behind, and the chopper can only fit two people, so he decides not to go with her, instead to stay behind with his friend and like fight off zombies and stuff. And then after a little bit of missions and stuff, it cuts to the future, and it says a few months later, and then you find out through context that his wife died at some point. And I don't know if it's the game, like that's what actually what happens in the game. I think what happened is that it just skipped ahead story stuff for me for the demo. So,
also, like for all we know, later in the game she'll still be alive. Like that's
she'll come back.
So yeah, so
and he'll become a zombie, and
I'm
then it'll
not
be
sure.
a zombie
queen. Yeah.
So the mission that you play in the open world, you actually go to her grave at some point. That's like one of the missions I did.
Listen, this is a zombie game. I trust nothing.
Right. Well, so that's the thing. I'm intrigued to see where the story is going.
Yeah. And cool.
The performances are really good. Like I like the main character a lot, even though he's that typical like gruff AAA white
it's
dude
Booker
biker
DeWitt.
Dude.
Yeah. Oh, but he's a biker, so he's.
Is
biker
it Troy
DeWitt.
Baker who plays him?
I don't think so. I don't know who plays it. His name is Deacon St. Clair. I think
sure. That's
his
name. That
which is
a name.
Again, just a AAA video game
and
name.
Deacon St. Clair, a man without a past,
Deacon St. Clair.
A man without a future.
I own four different leather jackets in varying shades of black.
And he has a biker buddy. One of the first missions I did was like tracking down this dude and getting a bounty. Like he had a bounty on him. And I remember there's this like super cinematic scene where like there's all this. You get him, you knock him down, and he's like, "Kill me!" Like he wants to be finished off before the zombies come and tear him apart. And there's this dramatic moment where you don't know if Deacon is gonna shoot him or not. And I was really hoping that you'd get the choice because it felt like, hey, this is a video game. You should get this choice. But no, he just shoots him. And it's like, ah. But the cinematics are well done. The shooting is not great from what I saw so far. The reticle aiming is very weird and soft and imprecise. And I got into a shootout with a few dudes at one point. And it was just like typical cover shooting, except it just didn't feel great to shoot people. Felt like worse, like almost like an old Uncharted.
So wait,
feel,
is it over
say.
The shoulder? Did you say this already?
Yeah, it's third person. Okay. Over the shoulder, yeah. It's all third person. Driving around the world is pretty cool. It's really gorgeous. You get all these gray skies. It's set in the Northwest, like Pacific Northwest, it's very much like that kind of game where it's like it just feels like feels like a Sucker Punch game. Like it feels like Infamous, where it's like very clearly inspired by Pacific Northwest skies.
I like that my backyard has like become the kind of new cool default setting for video games, only because it is a beautiful setting. I mean, it's really gorgeous. Just looking, and you get a lot of nice weather effects to use your, you know, HDR lighting or whatever as the sun comes through the clouds. You know, your description makes me think of Horizon Zero Dawn a little bit, because that game also, I remember when we talked about it, describing it as a very AAA video game ass video game. It just has all those Ubisoft things.
But that also is so different because you're shooting bow and arrow.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And you're fighting giant robot dinosaurs. No. I'm not saying it's the same.
From what I've seen so far, this doesn't have anything like that.
Yeah.
Anything that's like, oh, this is new and fresh. Like, so far from what I've seen, it's just everything I've seen before in video.
Well, and even this, I mean, fighting giant monsters and hunting them in Horizon was just Monster Hunter, and the bow and arrow was Far Cry. I mean, Horizon was very Far Cry. But my point is more that
Horizon had new ideas. Yeah, capture robots, and like, there's a lot of cool stuff.
I'm not just aimlessly drawing a comparison between the two games and saying they're going to be the same. I'm going somewhere with this. And that's just that Horizon wound up really distinguishing itself in the totality of the experience and in the story, especially. Like, by the end, that game, I thought, had a really good story. I loved the story to Horizon. And so this sounds a little similar. And I think that your description of it, I had kind of written that game off just in the back of my head thinking, oh, I probably won't have time for that. But I'm remembering now that it's cool to play one of those Sony big budget, beautiful looking prestige games. And if this is and it sounds like it is, sure, man, especially the more of these service games that come out. And I just think, oh, God, I don't want to play any more of these. I'd love to play a, you know, good 26 hour, you know, beautiful looking high production value game, even if it is a little
bit generic.
Nice
cutscenes, some people dying.
Yeah, some zombies.
Well, up, you know, a little bit, and then you fight a zombie.
And it's coming at the perfect time. So April 26th it comes out on PS4, and that's like, I don't think there's a lot of other stuff coming then, so it's a really good time, assuming that like The Last of Us 2 and Death Stranding are all later this year or like early next year.
Seems like a safe latest assumption.
Can't have too many zombie games at the same time. That's
you can't get overload yet.
No, for sure. And yeah, I just keep thinking about, like, I just want to play more, even though nothing about it really stood out to me as like, oh man, I have to like rave about this one thing, or I have to just like, I can't stop thinking about this one mechanic or this one feature or really anything about it. It all just feels generic to me. I still want to play more.
You know that? I've been encountering this with video games a little more just because I have this kind of a different drive to play them now, because I want to play stuff and talk about it with you too, but also, you know, it's just sort of, well, I have a couple hours free and I want to do something fun. And it is a really different feeling, but I think it's how a lot of people just think about video games is, well, that was fun. I just want to play.
You're starting to become a normie.
becoming a normie.
Kotaku, like,
Other people play games for fun.
They just are which one is the most fun that I can have in a couple hours? Kirk, and I don't care if it's groundbreaking or whatever.
So, Kirk, you've been out of Kotaku full time. You haven't been working at Kotaku for about 2 months now.
Yeah.
Do you find that you're like still thinking to yourself about like post ideas as you play stuff? Or have you turn that switch off?
I've mostly turned it off, but it depends sort of on how much I'm spending, how much time I'm spending playing games and reading about them. And I'm trying to do less because I have all these musical projects I've got to like get finished. And there could definitely have been days where I'm like, I just spent this morning not even playing games, just like reading game news or following stuff on Twitter. And I'm definitely like cutting that out pretty aggressively because I have to, because it just doesn't feel like a good use of time. And the more I do that, whenever I'm like on a week where I just haven't done that a lot, I really find myself just very removed from it and not thinking in those terms at all, which is nice just because it's like a new headspace, and a new headspace is always nice. But yeah, there are times where I'll think, oh, that'd be a good post. Or I guess I'll just tweet things when it would be a good post. But but it's fun to read Kotaku from
like
that
your division to door closing thing.
Yeah, exactly. Or like I really liked Zach, our weekend editor, or your weekend editor. Caught myself that time. Y'all's weekend editor. Zach did a post about Anthem helmet people, and it was about how everybody in Anthem is wearing helmets. I was like, this is the kind of thing I would have written. That is that's my kind of content. And it was good. So, you know, it's nice to see other people having those ideas, even if I'm not always generating them myself.
So yeah, so Days Gone, I'm excited for it, and I will definitely be playing it as soon as I get a code or get or buy it or whatever happens then. And yeah, I'm very curious to play more for sure. And I'm very curious to see what the story actually does, because I think that's the part that just impressed me the most, just the quality of the performances and the acting and the writing, and I was just surprisingly interested in this group of bikers and they're
finding out the true story of Deacon St. Clair.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital.
Crow portrays an ex-homicide detective, unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
I'm remembering bits and pieces as I talk about this. He in the open world section, when I cut to the open world section, he and his buddy, one of his biker buddies who he rescued at the beginning of the game, they are living in this like big tower that's sort of like the tower from Firewatch, like one of those towers in the wilderness, and that's their like base. And at one point your base gets disturbed and like you find someone running away and you have to like track him down, and you realize he's part of a gang that was like going after you, and you have to just murder them all. And yeah, it's
a video game.
It's a video game.
Yeah,
It is the most AAA ass video game that I have played. And yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing more.
Nice.
All right, why don't we take another break, and then we will talk about some off-topic stuff and our music, or your music. It's not my turn anymore. Kirk's music pick of the week. And we are back. We have a bunch of off-topic things to discuss. Now that we've all finished Russian Doll, maybe we can do a brief spoilery thing towards the end of the show. Are you guys down for that?
Yeah, maybe after the music pick. That's fine.
Cool. So yeah, so here's what we'll do. We'll talk about some other stuff without spoiling things. We'll do your music pick, and then we'll just do a little bit of spoiler chat on Russian Doll. So Maddie, why don't you go first?
Sure. So my girlfriend has never seen the show Killing Eve, and the second season's coming out in like a month, and really excited about it.
I didn't realize.
So yeah, I think it's in April. I don't know. I've looked up the date many times and yet it flies out of my head, but it's coming up. And so we're watching the first season. She's loving it, and that's been really fun. This is a very queer show, but it's also a really weird show because it sort of encourages you to lust after a character who is canonically a psychopath.
Yeah.
And then as a viewer, you have to kind of deal with the fact that that's a part of what you're experiencing as you watch it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, hashtag problematic feelings one might have aside about Killing Eve. It's a really, really fun watch. And I enjoy thrillers. I enjoy shows about a person finding a murderer, and that's very much what that show is. And the outfits are so good. So yeah, if any of that sounds like it would appeal to you listeners, then definitely check it out. It's all on Hulu for season, so easy to get now.
Yeah.
Cool.
It's a great show.
It's short, right? It's like eight mm-hmm. episodes.
Episodes, so, yeah. But each of them are like 45 minutes, and there are a lot of cliffhangers, so you gotta kind of prepare yourself for that. It's
mm-hmm.
not like Russian Doll where it's 30 minutes and there's a lot of cliffhangers. Yeah. It's like 45 minutes and there's a lot of cliffhangers.
Yeah, it's more involved.
Dude, I watched all of Lost live on the air. I'm very used to just nonstop cliffhangers and
you'll
waiting.
You'll be fine then.
We had to wait. I remember season 3 of Lost, they like, brief Lost divergent, they like broke it up into two parts, and the first half of season 3 was just 6 episodes, and then there was this cliffhanger where they made you wait for like 5 months before the second half.
You said season 3, right?
Awful.
Yeah,
that was when I stopped watching.
Yeah,
that was when you stopped.
Yeah.
You never finished it, or you did?
No, I came back. I came back, and it was great.
Oh, okay.
I just never watched all season 3.
You took a break because you were mad about them making you take a break.
And it was just season 3 was terrible. It was just a low point for the show.
Yeah, it got really bad. Yeah. Season 3.
I was like, I'm done with this. This is stupid. And then people were like, it's good.
Season one
is incredible.
Season one is incredible, and it had the worst cliffhanger because they open the hatch, and then it's like the camera like,
fuck
goes
you.
Down the
See
hatch,
you next
and then
year.
You don't find out. But then the season 2 premiere was incredible, and it was like Desmond, and like you're like, what the fuck is going on? It's like Make Your Own Kind of Music is playing, and he's making a smoothie, and you're like, what is happening? And then in the hatch, that was super cool.
So cool.
Anyway.
So I guess I'll just also say I had to watch Killing Eve live the first time around,
really?
Watching it with her, where I can be like, there's gonna be a cliffhanger in the next episode, let's not watch it yet. It's so much easier.
I watched it just on Hulu, one right after the other, and I think we watched the whole thing in like two nights.
I watched watched it live, which I regret. It was terrible.
What channel is that show on?
It was a BBC America.
It was on the BBC. So I was getting it through illicit means that the listener may imagine.
So I just finished Marvelous Mrs. Maisel season 2. Mm-hmm. Thanks to Kirk's recommendation. Incredible. I'm glad I watched the show. It's really, really good.
Yeah.
Love it to death and love Rachel Brosnahan. She is amazing. Season 2, I think it got a little, I don't know, it dragged a little bit towards the end. And Susie, who's Alex Bornstein's character, is just like driving me crazy. I just hate her. I just wish Maisel would fire her because she just drags her down.
She plays
this talented comedian and her like manager, this Susie, is just like this foul person who just like ruins things for Midge Maisel and just doesn't offer any redeeming qualities as a manager. It really makes no sense.
It's true. Well, it's kind of relatable.
She's like a leech.
In a certain way, where she was the person who said, hey, you could really do this and I'm going to manage you. And then from there on out, it's been this kind of weird symbiotic relationship where clearly Midge is this like ridiculously talented star in waiting. And Susie is like not up to the task of managing her, which definitely comes up a lot in season 2. And just doesn't rep her well and like blows opportunities and is just kind of a disaster. And so you're sitting there, Midge feels kind of obligated to her, and like I get it, but it is frustrating at times. I felt that way too, just thinking you guys can be friends, but you just need to fire her and like get a good manager. You're ready.
Yeah, she's terrible. And she's not even a good friend. She's like a foul, horrible person. And like, it almost feels like you're watching an abusive relationship where she's like abusive to Midge Maisel and like Midge Maisel just like puts up with it. And it's kind of sad, actually.
Yeah. You know,
it's played as a comic thing. It's actually kind of sad. But yeah, fantastic show. The stuff with the Catskills, the few episodes where they go to Catskills in season 2, just astounding, like stellar stuff. And I like the Zach Levi character who comes in. He's pretty good.
I like him in general.
Just really good stuff. Really, really good ass TV show. Highly recommend it.
Nice.
I think that's a Amazon Prime show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
Kirk, what about you?
Man, I have a ton because I guess I wasn't here last week, so I want to cover all the... I've like put too many things in. I'll go through a few. So the first thing I watched was the first part of Leaving Neverland, which is the new Michael Jackson documentary, like 4-hour documentary.
I want to watch this, but I got to wait till
sad?
I'm like
is
in
it
a mood.
Depressing?
Oh my, it's not depressing. It's like horrifying and really disturbing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a rough watch, but I think it's a really important one. And I do recommend that you guys watch it and that people watch it. I think as someone who recently, I did a whole Strong Songs episode about Thriller. Like, I really love Michael Jackson's music. I've played it endlessly at a million different bands, and like, he's a musical genius, etc. And it was, we all did the thing where we kind of looked away from this thing about him because it was never fully settled. And you know, there were these allegations that he had done inappropriate sexual things with children, and then he kind of got cleared, he was exonerated in that one trial, and everyone could kind of say, well, there was the weird thing with the kids, but I don't know. And then he died, so now I don't know, we just never really dealt with it. This movie is going to force everybody to deal with it. I haven't watched the whole thing, so I won't say too much, but we watched the first hour. It's super rough, and it's just one of those accounts of witness of victims. It's two men in this case. Wade Robinson is actually one of them, who's a fantastic dancer choreographer. He was on So You Think You Can Dance. That's actually where I know him from, but he's there, and another guy. And the stories they tell are just, it's just completely believable. You watch it and, you know, they're relaying the details of this, and it's like, yeah, this probably happened. Obviously, Michael Jackson's estate contests the whole thing. I think they're suing HBO for a lot of money. They say none of it happened. It's worth mentioning that. But anyways, I think people should watch it and just deal with it. It's long, it's rough, but watch it. So I haven't finished it, so that's all I'll say about that. But other things,
has it made you change the way that you listen to Michael Jackson?
Sure.
You're thinking about this stuff?
Yeah, and I want to finish it. I don't really know. But yeah, I mean, already, like, it's just there, and his music is still Michael Jackson's music. I mean, I don't even know. There's a really good, actually...
Well, so, like, with Woody Allen, like, I still, like, Annie Hall is still one of the greatest movies ever, but I feel like I can't, like, I don't know, I just have such conflict.
Yeah, I mean, I watched this, so I watched this 2 days ago, and I don't know. Like, I can't, I just can't tell you what it's like, and I haven't finished it.
Yeah.
So I don't know, but yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty safe to predict that this documentary will have a similar effect to, you know, to reading the account of what Woody Allen did. It's sort of a similar thing. And I think it'll make people say, as much as, you know, his music is amazing in so many ways and was the product of like collaboration and, you know, Quincy Jones produced Thriller and et cetera. As hearing his voice is going to have a different thing for people. There is, we should link this in show notes. There's a really good essay in the New York Times by Wesley Morris about this, one of the like great current critics. And he wrote really well about it, I think, like, and definitely better than I could articulate. So that's worth checking out. Maybe we can link that in show notes. Other like less super intense things. I listened to a podcast documentary called The Dropout, which is all about Theranos and Elizabeth Holmes. Do you know the Theranos story?
Yeah, I read Bad Blood, the book.
Oh, you read the book. Okay, so the guy who wrote the book is in this a lot. And it's kind of, you'll probably know the same information. It's fascinating. It's a lot like the Fyre Festival documentary. I recommend checking it out. It's a similar story of just this unbelievable scam that kind of built and built and built.
What a terrible name, The Dropout. They should have just called it like Bad Blood or something like that.
Well, I think Bad Blood was taken, so they couldn't. Really good.
So he wasn't involved, or
he is. Like, they interview him, and he's like they obviously base a lot of it on the book. It's an ABC documentary, so it's actually very well done. Their reporting is really good. It's interesting on some podcasty levels that maybe I can nerd out with the two of you about once you've listened to it. Like, they do some really good, consistent scene setting. Every time they introduce a new character, they describe the person, and they do a lot of describing of where they are. It's clear that they're good journalists who know what they're doing. Whereas sometimes these shows, it feels like it just moves really quickly from subject to subject, and you're not, they're not setting the scene. They're very methodical about it. So it's really well done. I recommend it. And it's just a fascinating story. I watched The Dragon Prince season 2, finished that. Pretty good. Speaking of things, every episode of that ends on a cliffhanger, like a ridiculous cliffhanger.
Oh, boy.
Because you're supposed to just watch the whole thing. It's only 3 hours or something. There's no way. And no one watches it every night or something. So, but it's good. I like that show. It's pretty good. Finished Big Mouth. That show's fantastic. Definitely.
Oh, man.
Think people
so
should
good.
Watch
Maddie,
it.
Maddie, you have to watch it. I have to watch it.
It's great. Season 2 does some really good stuff. So I really liked it. And I don't know.
Oh,
there's
man,
other
the
things,
episode,
but that's
Kirk, the episode where Coach Steve, I don't want to spoil it for Maddie, but the episode centered on Coach Steve in season 2 is just amazing.
Coach Steve is a lot. He's not always my favorite, actually, but I still like his character, and I like Nick Kroll's performance as him is pretty great. But yeah, it's a good show. My favorite thing is when Andrew, the one kid, whenever he gets angry and his hormone monster gets really angry, and he just goes rage, rage, and he just starts saying rage, and you know he's gonna do something completely stupid that's just gonna like hurt people and hurt him, and you're like, no, don't do it, but he's 13 and he's an idiot, and his hormone monster is telling him too, so he does. It's a really fun show.
Anything else from you?
No, that's I mean, there's other things, but I could go on forever. Whatever. Okay. That's enough.
Okay, good. That was Kirk's off topic section of the week. And now let's move to Kirk's music pick of the week.
So my music pick of the week was going to be my strong song, but it is not, because my Strong Songs episode, which you can find online at strongsongspodcast.com, is Let It Go from Frozen, which is really funny because I had no idea you were going to do that as your music pick last
no
week.
No one will believe this.
I know.
We need to really emphasize that we did not know this.
No, and this is the God's honest truth, is Jason and I had briefly discussed the song. This is a song that I have loved for years, had been planning to do a Strong Songs episode on since I conceived of the show. I already like knew it. I like had learned the whole song a little bit after I heard it. So I had this like long plan of like, oh, I really want to explain to people why this song is so awesome. And then had been thinking, okay, I'm going to do it on the next episode. And then, of course, I take a week off. And because it's in Kingdom Hearts, Jason picks it as his music pick. So that's the Strong Songs episode. I really liked you guys' discussion of it. Maddie, I liked your analysis of it. I talk a little bit about Defying Gravity on Strong Songs too. Obviously, I go pretty in-depth on the whole song. Uh-huh. But if you want to hear my whole complicated take on like power ballads, and I do a little history of Disney music, there's a lot in there, and really get into it. That song rules. But that
I'm
is not
excited
so excited.
About it.
That
I'm
is
excited
not my music pick though. So my music pick instead is also a Disney song, but it's a cover of a Disney song, and this is by a group called the Fearless Flyers, and it's a cover of Under the Sea from the 1989 Disney film The Little Mermaid. So this is a very funky and very different cover of it, and here is a clip of that. We'll be right back. So these guys are good. This is a good band. They're sort of Wolfpack adjacent. It's three guys from Wolfpack. It's Corey Wong is sort of playing that lead guitar that you just heard. He's like a rhythm lead guitar player, I guess. And Joe Dart is playing bass. And then this guy, Mark Lettieri, is playing guitar as well. And he's from a band, Snarky Puppy, that I've also featured as a music pick. They're all kind of in this same hyper-technically competent jazz funk world that they make lots of YouTube videos. And then this guy, Nate Smith, is playing drums. And he's the most interesting thing in this band because Nate Smith is a jazz drummer. He was like, that dude is ridiculous at drums. Like, one of the best drummers living. And in this band, he just plays like hi-hat, snare, and kick drum, and he plays these really simple but really, really funky and amazingly like tight and well done drum parts. So they're great. I really recommend checking them out. They just have like one EP out, and you can watch a video of them playing this Under the Sea cover, and they have original stuff that they do too.
But yeah, this is a cool cover.
Yeah, really they're a hell of a group. So yeah,
cool,
good stuff.
Okay, so before we say goodbye, why don't we say right now, this is your spoiler warning. Yeah. So if you have not watched Russian Doll, now is the time to turn off the show. You will not be missing anything else. We will not be getting into any other discussions other than Russian Doll, but we will spoil Russian Doll.
Yes.
So why don't we give people a couple of seconds to get to your phone, get to your car,
rush out
radio. If you're in the middle, if you're driving, if you're in the middle of a turn, you're like turning the wheel, you have a couple seconds now, you can finish your turn.
We don't need Siri
to get into a car.
Siri,
this is
going to
go on for the next 5 minutes, just us envisioning different things you may or may not be doing while you turn off the show.
Okay. So yeah, let's talk about Russian Doll. So I finished it a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
I thought it was incredible. I thought it was fantastic. Natasha Lyonne is excellent. But yeah, as Maddie, as you pointed out, one of the reasons I wanted to talk about it with spoilers is because the first couple episodes are pretty slow and you're like, where is this going? What are they doing with the show? Like, how many times am I going to have to watch this appear over and over again? And then at the end of episode 3, she's in the elevator with the dude and he's like, yeah, it's all right. I die all the time. And that's when it's like, oh, okay, that's what this story is. It's a story about two broken people who have to fix one another. And that's when it gets really interesting. And that's what I really loved about it, is like when it started getting into that stuff. And it really reminded me, I was texting Kirk about of The Leftovers a lot.
Yeah.
And that
I've seen
weird...
it get compared to The Good Place too.
Yep.
I think because they both are stories about doing good to other people. Although I really liked how Russian Doll is... I don't know if that's entirely what the ending or even the lesson of it is. I mean, part of it is, yeah, they're two broken people who have to fix each other, but it's so much weirder than that. And even the end of the show, you're kind of feeling like, did they really fix each other?
Right.
I mean, I liked how they wrapped it up with them ending up in each other's timelines and having to help each other without knowing who the other one was. But I was also kind of like, are they okay now, though? And I liked that. I thought that was really cool that you don't walk away from it. Like, Groundhog Day is the comparison that everybody's making, but Groundhog Day has this very pat ending. And it's very satisfying because you're like, oh, he's really run the gamut in this world. He's like,
he's
100%ed being a person. And he's like, figured it all out.
He's got
out.
The platinum trophy
for
being a person.
And like, that is what is so satisfying about watching the end of Groundhog Day, is that you're like, wow, he has nailed this day. And he's like the greatest guy he could ever be, but in a satisfying way. But in this show, you don't really feel that way, or at least I didn't feel that way, and I thought that was really cool. I don't know if they're going to do another season. I don't
even
know if I would.
I think they are.
That.
Yeah, I think they announced.
Maybe they'll
have
it be other characters.
I hope so.
I think they said it was going to be Natasha Lyonne again, but I'm not sure.
So I loved that about this show, and specifically, yeah, I really liked the way that it started as one thing, morphed into something very, very different and unexpected, then kind of came back. And then morphed again. So the way I see it is basically the first few episodes of the show are pretty, you feel like, okay, this is Groundhog Day, I get it. And you're kind of trying to solve it. You're trying to do the lost thing or do the thing that we do with Westworld or whatever.
Yeah, or the video game thing that she does.
You're like riding along with her.
Right.
She's trying to
figure
it out.
And the show itself, in the show, she is playing this role as well. Kind of, or at least gesturing toward trying to figure out what's going on. And so you spend the first few episodes thinking, oh, okay, so this is just one of those puzzles and it's going to all make sense. And then it stops making sense and it becomes much more complicated. And I should say here, so I'm having trouble like differentiating my thoughts. I listened to this really great discussion on the Slate Culture Gabfest where they did a whole spoiler fest.
Okay.
And it's really good. I recommend people listen to it. And it kind of crystallized thoughts that I'd already had. And then some of these are things they pointed out too, which are that basically the show turns inward in a way. And it becomes more about her internalized trauma and his as well, in a kind of like really shocking and unexpected way. The fact that he committed suicide, which may have been the thing that kicked the whole thing off, or maybe wasn't.
Right.
It's the left fact, ambiguous. The stuff with her mother, which is like really rough. I mean, her as a child with her very mentally ill mother kind of just suffering through this, and the way she misremembers what actually happened with her aunt. And so it kind of becomes a much more complicated and internal story about dealing with your stuff and like kind of helping. And then at the end, they pull this very video gamey move of like, and now, boom, here's how the rules have changed and you're in one another's worlds and you need to get the other person to remember. So you think, oh, okay, it does make sense. It's about, like you said, you know, it's about helping the other person. But then the very, very ending, to me, the first time I watched it, actually, I've seen people say they had to rewatch it. But when I first watched it, the ending is really ambiguous. I mean, there's this march going on that this guy Horse is leading, and they're cross frames kind of merge. But then, I don't know, I saw this the first time, is that they're walking toward the camera, but walking away from the camera is a woman with Natasha Lyonne's hair. And she goes walking past herself, and it's almost like there are multiple versions of her in the same reality. And suddenly you're left wondering, okay, wait a minute. Did they actually do the thing I think they did, or is there something much more complicated and ambiguous going on? And I loved that too, that the show was like, oh no, actually, like, no, it's just weird. And it kind of ended on
a
weird note.
Well, that's, very leftovers-y to just like leave you wondering. I read that as kind of like, I don't know, purgatory-ish thing where they like wound up in some sort of purgatory or some sort of afterlife that wasn't quite where they wanted to be, but also like seemed to bring them joy. I don't know. Thought it was interesting.
I liked the this was definitely some of the people on the Culture Gabfest pointed this out, and was not something that had occurred to me, but that Groundhog Day is like the male version of this, or like the more male version, and Russian Doll is the more female version. This show is, I think, completely created by women and written by women, and it does like it is like sort of very male approach of the like, here are the rules and now we're going to figure out all the rules and master them. And like in Groundhog Day, like you said, he 100%'s the day, he gets the platinum trophy and then he wins and comes out the other side because he played according to the rules and won. Where Russian Doll, it starts that way and then it very quickly is like much more, you know, it's just a very different approach. And it, you know, that's not my original thought, but I thought that was like a fascinating read on it.
Yeah, it definitely feels like a show that was maybe written by some people who were socialized to have gone to therapy more readily, perhaps, than men are. Because it's a very like post-therapy, post-meditation practices kind of a show. Like the way that suicide is treated in the show, I mean, it's a male character, but I haven't really seen another show do this where so much of it is focused on how he is with other people and sort of manipulating them and how that's presented as being a bad thing that he sort of slowly discovers, like how he's been treating his girlfriend and how concerned she is about him and how his own mental health affects other people. And like that is a really complicated thing to write without then feeling like you're blaming the character for having this mental issue. But I felt like the show managed to do it, and I was really impressed by that. And it definitely, again, read like something that was written by people who had been to therapy and like had some thoughts about the kinds of realizations that you have in therapy about depression and like having struggled with suicide and just being like, oh, like I was so stuck in my own head about myself, which is just a necessity of depression. Like you become sort of incapable of seeing other people, at least in my own experience. And then you manage to get out of it enough that you're like, wow, I was really also harming other people with my actions in ways that I at the time was incapable of even dealing with. I don't know. I thought it was really cool.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting observation, and I almost feel like the entire show is a metaphor for therapy, or like a metaphor for anxiety, where you're just like replaying the same thoughts in your head over and over again, or like you're saying out loud the same things over and over again,
or like misremembering certain things, and then being like, "Is that really how it happened?"
And then eventually you have a breakthrough. Hopefully, you have a breakthrough, and that's what the end of this is. And it's sort of like that hopeful ending of like breaking through and coming to terms with these things, and breaking the cycle of like, your own trapped anxieties, or like breaking the cycle of sitting in therapy and repeating the same things over and over again until finally it's like, oh, that's what I have to do differently. And yeah, that's an interesting perspective on, that's such a good point that Groundhog's Day is the male version of this and this is like the female version.
Again,
that's
not mine. Really listen to the Culture Gab Fest.
No, it is. No, that's a really good point.
Kirk, but I thought amazing it, I was like, point great. Only that's by really, you. Yeah. Really good job.
Yeah, good job re-articulating someone else's idea. Yeah, I think Alan for me was a little underdeveloped. I thought she was a stronger character than he was.
That may have been as much time with him.
Yeah, and it may have just been a function of the story. But I like that. And I think that also knowing Natasha Lyonne's own story helps sort of contextualize the show, since she had she's talked about this a lot, about she had a really serious drug problem. She almost died and kind of came back, I'm guessing, with the help of a lot of therapy. And that certainly, I mean, I think she's described the show as being sort of autobiographical or trying to express some of the things that she went through. And there are these, you know, these sequences where she's like doing lots of drugs and like losing time and the day keeps coming back and repeating. And you're like, it feels like a drug experience. A lot of the show does. So, yeah.
Yeah. It also has a lot of good New York hipster jokes.
Oh, man.
It's funny. Show. It's a lot of good humor in the show. The video game studio scene, I wish there was more of that, but that one meeting that we got was hilarious.
It's great.
With her just like grabbing the computer and going, oh, I'm going to fix this bug. Look
I
at
wish
this.
The no, whole blah. Show could have been that. I would watch. Just, I hope that season two is just her going back
just
to work
just
the video
on,
game
is it
studio,
rock and roll
finishing
studios?
Up the game.
Is it is rock and roll rock studios and roll the name studios. Of her game studio? Yeah. I like that.
Yeah, I texted Kirk at some point. I was like, oh my God, he's playing the same game as her. It must be related to the game. And he responded saying, that is exactly what someone who just finished episode whatever
Russian Doll
the game barely even plays a role in
no,
it.
Right,
and
it's
like
totally
the idea
not.
That she could have
it's
shipped a game
herring,
that she
though.
Couldn't beat doesn't mm-hmm. even really make sense as like a passing comment. Like some of
and
the
like,
video
there's
game
some
stuff
thematic
the show
stuff
is...
in there where they're like, oh, she's all alone, you have to beat it alone.
Yeah,
and it's, you know, but it's
part,
right,
yeah.
it's not at all a
but
key
it doesn't
to unlock.
Really...
No.
Well, clearly they played Mario Maker. And they were like, oh, so you have to be able to beat a level before you can ship it. So that's
what
it how
is.
It works. That's how this all works, right?
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Well, so great show. I really enjoyed it. I'm really excited for more of it. And yeah, Natasha Lyonne.
She's
amazing.
Such a badass, man. She's so cool.
Just a powerhouse.
She did such a great job making this show. I'm really glad she made it.
Mm-hmm. Also, she's fantastic on Orange is the New Black, a show that I've since, like, I'm probably three seasons behind or something like that because it really went off the rails. But the seasons I watched, she was fantastic. Yeah. Okay, cool. So that is it for this week's episode.
It is.
We will be back next week, and then in 2 weeks we will be at GDC, and get prepared because Maddie, you and I will be interviewing lots of people from the GDC floor. Mm-hmm. We will be doing our whole just a week full of podcasts. You will get so many friggin' podcasts that week, so look forward
to it.
It's
gonna be crazy.
It's gonna be awesome.
Cool. All right, see you guys next week.
All right, see ya.
Bye.
Kotaku Split Screen is an official podcast of Kotaku.com. It's produced by Jason Schreier, Maddie Myers, and me, Kirk Hamilton. I edit and mix the podcast and also wrote and performed our theme song and other music. We're a part of the Fusion Podcast Network, where Mondano Mofidi is executive producer of audio. You can find us on popular podcast services like Panoply, NPR One, Google Play, and Apple Podcasts, and we hope that you'll leave us a review if you like what you hear. Find old episodes at kotaku.com/splitscreen. Email us at splitscreen@kotaku.com.